Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there. Welcome to The Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to help you stop counting calories, carbs, and fat grams so you can easily get to a healthier weight and get on with your life. So you can talk about your day, think about your day, not your diet. That's the plan. If you'd like to join me here in my makeshift home studio, my number here is 818-602-4929. That is actually not my number. That is the studio number. And my wonderful engineer, Ronan, will patch you through to me. 818-602-4929. So today I am going to talk about how to stay calm when you're anxious about coronavirus or anything else. But I also got a few messages asking me to finish my story. I had written about the three essential keys to my recovery for the GERS eating disorder blog, and someone had suggested that I share it with you. So I started to share it with you, and I'm going to finish sharing it with you. And of course, if you want to call in, feel free to interrupt me. I'll finish later. So last week, I had talked about, as an 11-year-old girl living in London, moving from California, where I described my initial experience with bulimia, which came as a result of feeling very disappointed and upset over a situation that happened at school and with the coach. And rather than deal with my feelings about the coach, by the way, my feelings about the coach was really about my feelings about my family, I focused on food and weight. And so then I eventually, as some of you know, I was on a roller coaster ride throughout my life up until college, where I was the poster child for eating disorders. And I would restrict, I would binge and purge. I had every eating disorder there was, went to therapy, talked with my therapist about everything in my life, except one thing, what was going on with food, like the main thing. She had no idea. But I continued to go, and I had gone to therapy for anxiety. And over time, I realized that I was thinking less about food. I was doing fewer food-related destructive things. And eventually, I stopped using food to cope. I never went back to my eating disorder, and not once had I ever talked about food and what was happening with food with my therapist. So how is that possible? How did I recover from being the poster child of eating disorders without ever talking about food? And the reality was, of course, it was never about food. Food was not the problem. Food was the solution to the problem. So then I discussed in the article and for you my three keys to recovery. Although they call it recovery, I call it liberation. You recover from the flu. You recover from a virus. Hopefully people are recovering from this horrible, horrible virus, especially the person that I am thinking of who's in the hospital right now fighting. You recover from that. You liberate yourself from eating problems, from binge eating, stress eating, any kind of emotional eating. You liberate yourself. You create freedom. How? First, you stop dieting. You have to stop dieting, because dieting keeps you focused on what you're eating and not why. Got to make peace with the past. As I said before, my food was not the problem. It was the solution to the problem. And the true problem was my toxic relationships with my emotions and myself. That came from my childhood. So part of what was going on was I I had not processed the pain of feeling inadequate compared to my brother, the genius, the mathematical prodigy and the musical genius. And that's why the day at gymnastics practice, when the coach was so mean to me, was so devastating. My deep yearning for coach's approval really was the deep yearning for my parents' approval. So coach was a parental figure who had a favorite, just as my parents appeared to favor my brother. And I competed with the other girl who was the star of the team because I couldn't compete with my brother, the star of the family. My third key was to turn my inner critic into a friend. My eating disorders didn't go away overnight. So at first I noticed small changes. Instead of counting calories all day, I paid more attention to my feelings. I realized I needed a different way to respond to myself when I was upset. And I hadn't realized how mean and dismissive I was to myself. I was really mean, but I learned to speak differently to myself and differently about myself. Being harsh made me feel bad. And then I used food one way or another for comfort and distraction. But I began talking to myself the same way I talked to my friends. So my new rule was, if I wouldn't say it to someone I cared about, I did not say it to myself. When I felt the urge to binge, I became curious, not critical. I asked, okay, why do I want to eat this? What's going on with me? Curiosity, compassion, and care helped me climb out of a pit of self-loathing and accept my perfectly imperfect self. Today, as a psychoanalyst specializing in eating disorders, I help eating disorder patients and coaching clients all over the world change their relationship with food and with themselves. And one of the most effective strategies is one I use for myself. One I used for myself and continue to use. So as a young gymnast, I told myself, you're disgusting. You have no willpower. You're never going to be a good enough gymnast. Using the pronoun you when you're referring to yourself means you're using the second person. Your inner critic is in charge of your thoughts. And this means you might be eating, restricting, purging, whatever is going on, just to escape your own mean voice. So the next time you find yourself talking this way, try replacing the pronoun with I. See what happens. I imagine it would be more challenging for me to have said, I'm disgusting. I have no willpower. So give it a try, because cultivating a kind, reassuring response to yourself is like a verbal hug. When people feel good, they don't use eating disorder behaviors. They don't binge eat or stress eat or emotional eat. They don't do that to soothe, numb, or escape their emotions because they're responding to them. For me, bulimia and binge eating and restricting were negative strategies to cope with painful circumstances. But when I created new ways of self-soothing and created a new appreciation for me, I gave up those eating disorders forever. And due to what researchers call brain plasticity, which is a very fancy term, which means we can learn new things. We can learn new things as we get older. We all have an incredible capacity to change the way we think and behave. I have treated women and men in their 40s, 50s, 60s, into their 70s, and I know this. It is possible to completely liberate yourself from an eating disorder. There is always, always hope. So I hope that my story and my experience, which I articulate briefly in this article and more deeply in my book, The Binge Cure, 7 Steps to Outsmart Emotional Eating, will give you hope that you too can change your relationship with food, that you too can find a new way to be with yourself and therefore with food. Okay, so now I want to talk about how to stay calm when you're anxious about coronavirus or anything else. These are uncertain and anxious times. It is no surprise that lots of people are stress eating, binge eating, using bulimia or restricting as a way to manage the anxiety of living through a global pandemic. This is a very scary time, and we are all vulnerable. And that is why I am so pleased to share some thoughts by Dr. Bob Rich. He's a psychologist and author of 18 books, and I'm going to give you an excerpt from his latest book that will help us feel calmer during this time of global anxiety. And using these guided imagery techniques, you'll soon be feeling more relaxed and less anxious. So what I'm going to talk about now is from Dr. Bob's book called From Depression to Contentment, a Self-Therapy Guide. He talks about guided imagery. So one way of putting peace into your heart is by going on a little inner journey. Tell yourself a story and live it within your imagination as vividly as possible. Actually, he tells us, this is the technique of hypnosis. So good guided imagery is self-hypnosis. So this technique takes you into a trance state, which is nothing mysterious, he said, just helpful. If you've ever felt as if no time had passed, but you've done something, like you've been reading a good book, you've been driving from here to there, or ironing or cooking or whatever, just something where all of a sudden it's like, oh my gosh, what time is it? If you've ever had that experience, then you've been in a trance state. And guided imagery can have up to six components, but it isn't necessary to use all six. So the first one is relaxation, and he gives us a relaxation script. Here we go. Close your eyes and imagine a source of healing light out in space. That could be almost anything. God, an angel, your long dead beloved grandmother or grandfather, a glowing planet, an entire galaxy, anything that evokes that feeling. One of Dr. Bob's clients imagined it as the dog of her childhood, whose name had been Angel. Invite this healing light to shine on top of your head. Feel it gently tingling its way in, relaxing, soothing. Extend the area of healing light down so it's a cap over your forehead, your ears, the back of your head. And now it's over your closed eyes. Soothing, healing, down your cheeks, over your mouth and jaw, down to your neck, relaxing the strong muscles that carry your head. Feel the beautiful healing light trickle onto your shoulders, relaxing, soothing, smoothing, so your arms get heavy. Now feel it going to your upper arms on both sides, your lower arms, all the way to your fingertips. Next, your upper body, your chest, your back, your heart, your lungs, feel them glow. Your lower body, stomach, lower back, all those wonderful organs within glowing with light. Then your legs, all the way to the tip of your toes, top to toe, glowing, healing, beautiful within. So that's the first step of Dr. Bob's healing strategies to be calm when you're anxious. Now, I don't know about you, but as I was even talking, I could feel myself relaxing. I hope you did too. I hope you're feeling just a little bit more relaxed. By the way, when you're relaxed, you're not going to use food to relax. A lot of times people find themselves, especially now, eating a lot of carbs, like pasta and bread and things like that, that can just soothe your body. They just calm your body. And there are other ways of calming your body. The next phase he calls is the induction phase. This is a scene vividly described using all the sense modalities in which there is movement and progression. This script may invite you to walk in a valley between forested mountains with a creek chattering on your left and grazing animals on your right along a path to a waterfall. The path leads you behind the falling water onto a stone ledge. Stone above your head, stone below your feet, stone at your back, the curtain of falling water in front. Water is the universal cleanser. It cleans away all hurt and pain. It is the universal solvent. It dissolves all stress and trouble. Or, another script, go down an elevator from the 50th floor, watching the numbers above the door going from 50 to 1 to ground. Also, a gentle downhill walk along a forest path is great. People who have physical handicaps do best with a script in which they stay still. A great one is to sit comfortably in the back of a rowboat. The person you trust most in all the world is behind you, out of sight, but felt. This person is gently, slowly rowing. All your pain, suffering, and worries are on the shore. Dr. Bob says you can devise your own scripts, or you can check out his healing scripts at his website, which is bobswriting.com. Check it out. Or create your own, as he says. The next tip is to create a safe place. This is somewhere you can feel absolutely the best. It can be a real place you love or something made up in your imagination. Typical choices are a tropical beach, a mountaintop, a comfortable seat by a waterfall, looking at a flower-covered cottage, being inside your childhood bedroom, if you had a great childhood, I must say. If not, do not go there. Do not go into your childhood bedroom. Stay away. You can remember or construct any environment you like. But you don't have to stick with realism, especially if your body is not a nice place to be because of pain or some struggle or just you're not feeling good in your own skin for whatever reason, because of weight, because of heartache, because of sadness, anxiety. You know, you could become someone or something else. Three of Bob's favorites are thieves. He likes being a trout in a rock pool, gently waving his fins so he stays motionless relative to the shore. His muscular, beautiful, shining trout body, gently undulating, perfect for his world, and his world perfect for him in the cool, crystal clear water with the silver roof of the surface above him. He also likes being an eagle. This is how he puts it. My mighty wings are spread wide, motionless, as I lazily circle in a thermal updraft far above all the pain and worry down there on the ground. I can feel my clawed feet hidden within the feathers of my body, my spread tail steering me, the calm gaze of my powerful eyes scanning the ground far below. The wind is gently ruffling my feathers. Another one he likes is being a tree. You can take perhaps 10 minutes of creation, starting from the roots and going up to the leaves. Once it's complete, you can instantly return to it any time. One of his patients liked to sit on a fluff of a cloud. Another patient chose to look at a poster of a waterfall in Tasmania and then step through it so he could look at the falling water, hear the roar, feel the spray of the water on his face. You can be in a rocking chair with a toddler you love, who is perhaps an objectionable teenager now, quietly playing at your feet. Tie your safe place to feelings of serenity, safety, comfort, strength, power, whatever personal qualities will help you to cope with your current situation. He says he also always makes this suggestion to be able to access the safe place when out of the trance at any time when doing any other task. This is quite possible, he assures us. You can be in the middle of a painful medical procedure, having an argument with someone, being cross-examined by a hostile barrister or attorney, Dr. Bob is from Australia, in court. You could be doing a complicated job and at the same time feel yourself in the safe place, drawing strength and peace from it. His next tip says it's called work. You enter trance for a reason. This could be pain control, healing some illness or injury, dealing with distressing memories, or merely stress reduction. And then, after you work the trance, after you're in the trance, return. Take time when emerging from the trance, especially when it's been a deep one. If for any reason a trance is interrupted, he warns you can develop a headache, be disoriented, be affected by suggestions. In that case, you need to return into the trance and come out.
Hello.
I think I was in a little bit of a trance. Nicole, can you bear with me while I just finish? I'm almost finished with this it's coming out of the imagery. Yes. Just stay here. Just stay with me, okay?
Okay.
When using guided imagery, Dr. Bob's script is to slowly count backwards from 10. And when he's with someone, he draws the person's attention to some aspect of the situation, the feel against the chair of your body, your breath, the sounds you hear. And those are ways to come out of the trance. And you could, so these are ways that you can calm yourself. As you could see, I think I was getting into a trance as I was reading this. I'm going to tell you a little bit about Dr. Bob later, but now let's go to my caller. Hello.
Hi, it's Andrea.
Hi, Andrea. I couldn't hear you very well, so normally Nicole is the first person to call, so I thought it was Nicole, but it is not. How are you, Andrea?
I'm not bad, thank you. I would love some advice.
Absolutely.
Okay. So I have this friend. I'm not going to say her name because it wouldn't feel right. But she has been like a sister to me for years. Like we have gone through so much together and I love her and I adore her. But I'm starting to feel a strain in the relationship. I think as of late, I've been doing so much self-development. That's sort of been my intention throughout this year. And I just want to better myself and how I think. And I just want to be healthier in body, mind, spirit, all that kind of stuff. And I have seen that change in myself, and it's something I actively work on every single day. And I think because of that, that's where the strain in the friendship is coming from. I think we were both very negative, and we used to, you know, they say misery loves company. I think that's how our friendship started. But I'm no longer in that place, and I'm so happy about that. And her negativity, and she's very cynical and very dark and very, I don't even know what the word is. I genuinely don't. It's just, it's very hard for me to talk to her now, because we aren't in that same place. You know, I'm very big on optimism and, like I said, personal development and working on yourself, and she's not necessarily like that. So sometimes I find myself like saying things and she'll just switch it around and make it extremely, extremely, extremely negative to the point where sometimes it physically makes me sick. Or sometimes she'll send me a message about something and I will, you know, I will listen. She'll ask me for advice, my insight, I'll give it to her. It's not what she's looking for. Sometimes like I find like it's more of a pity party than anything else. And I don't want to lose this friendship, but it's come to the point where I don't want to be in that space. Like I don't want to have to, sort of, if you're not working on yourself and if you're not trying to be the best version of yourself possible, and if you are sort of putting yourself in a place where you're consistently, you're just not being open and you're sort of looking for negativity and a pity party. And I can't really resonate with that. And I don't know what to do. I just gave you an earful, but
no.
It's very,
very hard.
Because sometimes.
I just have to stop you. You did not give me an earful. There's a negative pejorative element to that phrase. What you did was you shared how you're feeling. And so the fact that you even would like sort of apologize in a sense. I just gave you an earful. Sounds like a bit of an apology. Like, oh, I just said too much. You didn't. I guarantee you there are a lot of people who are listening who can completely relate to what you're saying, because sometimes when we change, other people don't want to change with us. They're attached mm-hmm. to, some people are attached to suffering, but you were about to say something else. So
exactly it. That is exactly it. She's attached to the suffering. And frankly, she's better off than most people. But I think, like, because of her mindset and how she continuously, it's that narrative that she's taken on. And yes, she has the right. She's gone through so much in her life. I understand that. But I think at one point, are you just holding on to it? And it's putting a strain on our friendship, and it's affecting me physically.
When you say it's affecting you physically, it's tell me about that.
Yesterday she texted me, and I don't know how it happened, but I found myself eating a lot of chocolate, and it just in that way. But then sometimes it's physically, like, I see her name and I'm like, oh, and I feel like a sense of nausea in my and it's an upset stomach, and it's.
Okay, so your body is telling you something. Right? We have
my body is telling me something.
Yeah. So, all right. So,
it sucks.
Yes, she's literally making you nauseous. So, I mean, it's sickening. So, nausea is about wanting. Before we get to the nausea part, I just want to say something about some people. Their grief, they're injustice collectors. They're collectors of injustices. And when they say they want help, they really don't. They really just want to speak their injustices. And then they ask for help. You give them your advice and they reject it. So they're also help rejectors, because there's some gain that they are getting from being in that place, what you call pity party. Well, maybe it's worked for her. And that's her only way that she knows of getting engagement, of having people join with her in the, oh, how horrible it is. And maybe she doesn't know other ways of relating. And it's this regurgitation.
That's what it sometimes seems like.
Yeah.
And it's sad because, oh, she's just a beautiful soul, but it's become very hard to speak to her. Because sometimes I want to say, like, you're doing this, there's certain things, like certain topics, and I'm like, but you did that to yourself, intentionally putting yourself in that situation. And she'll blatantly say, I know better, but I wanted this, or I knew X, Y, Z would happen, but, you know, I was bored or something. And it's like, it's very hard for me as a friend to hear that. And then it's very hard for me as a person to be like, well, you knew better.
And okay. Now, there's the logical and the psychological.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So there are two types of people in the world. Those who can reflect and those who react. Reflective people are the ones who say, what is my part in this? Or why do I do this? Or why do I act in ways that are against my own self-interest? And let me try to understand what's going on. What is eating at me? Why am I eating that chocolate? What's curious and reflective. The other people, And they'll also say, how do I affect others? How do I affect the world? What is my part in it? Reflective people think about how they think. Reactive people just react. A perfect example of this is our president. And yes, if you're listening and you're a Trump supporter, whatever, I'm sure you'll send me, emails and stop listening to the show, but he is a classic example of reactivity and lack of reflection. Some people, and your friend sounds like someone who just reacts and doesn't think about, well, wait a minute, why am I doing this? So there's the logical and the psychological. Logical is we know what we know. Look, we all know if you want to be healthier and or lose weight or whatever it is, eat less, exercise more, mostly the eat less. We know that logically. It's not so simple because there are psychological reasons that are informing why people are doing what they're doing. So I guess your only hope with this friendship, and I would ask you what you're getting from this friendship, but my only hope, your only hope is to really see if this is someone who is capable of reflecting.
So if she's capable of reflecting?
Yeah. If you can say something to her like, you know, I notice that you seem really stuck in this place of having a narrative about the world that's awful. It seems like it's really easier for you to feel that way than it is to be hopeful. What do you think that's about? And if she just says, oh, I don't know, that's just the way I am.
That's what she says. I have heard those words so many times. Or like she had a tough upbringing, so she'll sort of reflect back on that as well and say, like, oh, this happened to me. In a way, she'll reflect. She'll say, oh, it happened to me in my childhood. That's just how I am.
No, that's not reflection. That's an explanation. Reflection is, this happened in my childhood.
It consistently does. And I'm like, well, I had a crappy childhood too. And, you know, I've worked on myself and I've made peace and I've sort of, I know my triggers now. And, you know, you deep dive into what exactly is happening.
So I guess you have a choice. Either try to see if you can get her to change, which is highly unlikely, or challenge her, or just not join with her in this. Because, and say, hey, you know, we don't have to talk about this bad stuff. Like, let's talk about something else. Because otherwise, your friendship is predicated on bemoaning the awful.
Yeah, very true. That's how it feels. I'm like, and that's when I physically get sick because I'm like, oh goodness, this is all we're talking about, like, consistently.
What are you getting from this friendship?
At this point, like, I don't want to say nothing, but realistically, nothing meaningful.
Is it familiar to try to help somebody?
Yeah, very much so.
Okay. So might we wonder that you were more comfortable helping others and meeting the needs of others, and that made it really easy for you to have this friendship because it worked out perfectly. You were there to help. And you were there to give and she was there to receive, or you were commiserate over the awfulness of life, but you were there to be helpful, but at the expense of yourself. And now that you're taking better care of yourself, as you were saying when you called last week and just, you know, had this very different way of relating to yourself, you're not as invested in giving up you to take care of somebody else.
Actually, that's very true, because I frequently find myself, like, in all my relationships, I'm romantic, my familial relationships, my friendships with my girlfriends, anybody. That's very true. A lot of it used to be taking care of other people, but now it's really less about that. Like, it was, that actually really resonates.
Yeah. So something to think about is, well, some relationships can evolve and change, and some can't. So just for you to get in touch with your disappointment in this friend and to be able to work through that rather than turn to chocolate, because turning to chocolate is is going to lead you to then turn against yourself. So it's easier to turn against yourself than it is. Yeah. Than it is to say, oh, my friend is so annoying to me right now. Or I wish she would, you know, have the capacity to, you know, stop being a person who's so negative. So just being able to bear. Yeah. Just being able to.
I didn't have that earlier, but it's.
So.
That's come.
So I would say, and then I have to jump off because we have someone else waiting, but I would say that this is something that a lot of people who start getting healthier in their attitude towards themselves and the world experience. Some relationships evolve, some don't. We don't know which is going to be which with this person, but just recognize that there is sometimes loss and grief involved in getting healthier.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
Help me guide this little pickle I'm in. So thank you very much.
You're welcome. We can talk about it more. Call me back next week and let me know how it goes.
I definitely will. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And Ronan said that there was another caller, but I am not hearing that caller. So let me tell you about, hi caller. Can you hear me? Hello?
Thank you for calling. The next available representative will assist you.
Okay. Then let me tell you about, Bob. I think that there was some glitch there. Bear with us as we try to, Ronan is working from home and not the studio. I'm working from home and not the studio. So he's doing a pretty magnificent job of somehow patching people in when they call the number that goes to the studio, but now goes to his home office. It's a lot of adaptation, which I'm sure all of you can relate to. So let me tell you about Dr. Bob. He earned his doctorate in psychology in 1972, worked as an academic, a researcher, and applied scientist until retiring for the first time at 36 years old. Later, he returned to psychology. He ran a private practice. He was on the national executive. Of the College of Counseling Psychologists of the Australian Psychological Society. Then was the director. He was the therapist referrers sent their most difficult cases to. He retired in 2013, but he still does pro bono counseling over the internet. And his major joy in life is to be of benefit to others, which is why he wrote a book. That's in effect, he says, A Course of Therapy, which is the book from which this was taken. And by the way, I will be, if you want to see this in writing, you can go to my blog, Make Peace with Food, Make Peace with Food number 2day.blogspot.com, and read it. And I'll also be posting these tips on Facebook. So you won't miss a thing. Okay, so now, let me see. Now, let's talk about back to overcoming shame, because shame is really so much at the root of eating issues. And it appears to be shame. Oops. It appears to be shame about eating, but often that's a displacement from a deeper shame. And then eating is something that you transfer the shame to. It often has its roots in a sense of something wrong, about you, not good enough, that kind of thing. But one of the main keys is to realize you're not alone. You know, when we are alone and we're filled with shame, we're shame ridden, it feels unbearable and you can't go out in the world because what if people see? What if people see the real you? And what if they know? Hold on, I'm getting a message. I'm getting a message, Ronan. If you can hear this, I just got a message from Nicole on Facebook that she dialed, but there was no response. Again, that number is 818-602-4929. We'll see. Ronan is going to call you back. Let me see. I'll let her know. Oh, this is very, you know, fly by the seat of your pants. Okay. Nicole, if you're, hopefully you're still listening, Ronan is going to call you back. So when you realize that you're not alone, that other people are doing things that you feel so ashamed of, other people are binging or doing things with food that you think are just totally mortifying, you realize you're not alone. You're not the worst person in the world. You can start to say to yourself, you know what? I'm human. I'm just human. I'm doing so. Well, I think Nicole, can you hear me?
Janina, hello.
I can hear you. Hi, Nicole.
Fantastic. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. What's going on?
Oh, so much. let's see. So I think the end of our last call, I was talking about how Passover was coming up and I didn't want to really practice it and not do the bread because I didn't want to trigger like anticipation of deprivation. And even though I don't eat bread that often, I don't want to feel like I can't have it because then I want to have it. And that same thing happened. Saturday night, we were at my aunt's house and she was having, even though it's Passover, she didn't really observe it. She was having this like 21 grain seed bread with peanut butter. And you know how much I like peanut butter. So she was eating a slice of the bread with peanut butter and like some tea. And it looked really good. And I kind of resisted. I think I just wasn't hungry, but it looked good. And so I looked at the bread and I like said the next time I'd go to the supermarket, I'd buy it. So I went to Bristol Farms to get some other stuff. And I saw that bread as soon as I walked in. It's called like Dave's bread or something. So I bought a loaf of it. And then at the checkout line, I was like contemplating, should I buy this? Should I not buy this? Okay, my boyfriend's going to be pissed. It's Passover. He's going to be like, why did you eat bread? Why should I tempt myself? But I can just have a slice. And for breakfast, I can have one slice and peanut butter. And that would be my breakfast. And so then, I'm making this very long, but then, okay, the next day I was in the refrigerator and there's a bunch of stuff eating at me. So I was, yesterday morning, I was like, you know, I was stressed out. I was feeling overwhelmed. My boyfriend talked to me about going to see his therapist with him so that we can do like this 6-week course on like strengthening our relationship, which I like. But it made me a little nervous because I like started to become anxious about what might come up. So I was feeling that and I was feeling super overwhelmed because I have like 2 jobs and it's tax season and all my clients are calling me about, you know, the stimulus money and the relief loans and all that stuff. And then I have my other job. So it's like I'm working 2 jobs, which I later realized is actually a positive and I shouldn't be complaining about having work because so many people don't have work at this time. So anyways, all this stuff was eating at me. And then I ended up, I don't want my voice to hear that. Can you hear me?
Okay. So I'm going to guess that you ended up eating bread and peanut butter and maybe
a lot. A lot.
Okay.
I literally took off the crust.
It's okay.
12 slices, 12.
Okay. So you've been
really bad.
Okay, so you binged on bread and peanut butter. So yep. Look, here's the thing. You're already recognizing that you a lot was eating at you, mm-hmm. and that maybe, and I'm wondering if maybe, in addition to the experience of deprivation, which of course makes you want something that you can't have, mm-hmm. and all of that, I'm wondering if you have thoughts other than, if you have uncomfortable thoughts about going to your boyfriend's therapist, and that maybe, you know, in the past, it was easy to focus on what you ate than some feelings and thoughts you might have, right?
Yeah.
So you said a couple of things. Your boyfriend was going to be mad if you brought bread into the house, and that he wants you to go to his therapist. So
yeah.
I'm wondering if focusing on 12 slices of bread and peanut butter is less upsetting than focusing on what's really upsetting you.
Yeah, I think I'm afraid of some things coming up.
And if some things come up, and if some things come up, then what? What's the fear? So things come up, and then what?
We break up, or like,
okay.
Same shit, same abandonment, no trust, same shit as always. Sorry, I'm being hard on myself. I need to stop for a minute.
Okay, yeah, so Nicole, I want you to, here, let me have some compassion for you and kind of restate what might have happened. That when he says, hey, let's go to therapy, and you're like, okay, another part of you goes, oh no, something's going to come up. We're going to break up. I'm going to be alone, empty void, enter bread and peanut butter to fill the void. So your fear is of breaking up, as if things coming up is going to lead to breakup, rather than what's another possibility? Does
the opposite, working through stuff, getting stronger, getting closer, elevating the relationship, growing on my end, growing on his end, and growing together as a couple, and working through, even though, you know, most things are great, even the small things, and working through those things so that we can be even stronger as individuals and as a team.
Exactly. So what is what if, and what is what is?
What is what if, and what is what is? Focus on what is.
Yeah, because so what if is break. Yeah, what if is, oh my God, something's going to come up and then we're going to break up. Boom. What is what has he said? I want to strengthen our relationship. What else?
Wants me to work on myself to work on my impulsivity and like family stuff, and just making sure that we're going to be compatible for the long run and the long term. Yeah. Which is the opposite of what I'm fearing, which is the what if and not the what is, right?
Exactly. His investment is in strengthening the bond, not breaking the bond.
Yeah, actually. Yeah.
So if we understand that the emptiness that you felt, which was a result of what happens when you break up, you feel empty, you feel bereft. There's a void, there's a hole. You know, that emptiness got filled up symbolically.
I have to tell you, I had this thought that, like, I remember the last one. The only good thing that came out of it is, like, I legit could not eat for, like, 2 weeks, and I lost like 7 pounds.
Nicole,
and like, I know.
I don't have my sounds that I normally have, so I have to make the buzzer sounder.
I needed that. Yeah.
Yes, because that takes you away from what's going on in your head and your heart, and makes you focus on your body.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell him? Part of you is really looking forward. I'm not going to put it that way. One possibility is that you can tell him you are a little bit looking forward to it and scared. Okay, and what did he say?
I did. He said to talk to the therapist about it.
Well, He didn't say, hey, he just said, talk to a therapist about it.
No, he said, well, why don't you talk to him about it? So the therapist is male. So I said, I'm a little bit nervous. Like, I'm nervous about what's going to come up. And so he said to me, well, why don't you talk to him about it in a nice, compassionate way? And then also said that he's so excited to see, like my transformation and, like, how he's done all the work and, like, how he's changed as a person. And I had had a panic attack last night, and he was really, like, loving and supportive and helped me. Like, I was crying and, like, could not breathe and nauseous, and he really, like, just was supportive and, like, really, really helped. And he said that he used to be like that, and with going to this therapist, he kind of was able to, like, self-help, like, you know, and, like, just, like, all, he, like, helped me breathe, and he's like, okay, think about Greece, because he knows how much I love vacationing in Greece, and he took me there, and he's like, oh, what are we going to do when we go there? So he kind of, like, he really helped, so he's just,
good.
So,
unfortunately, I'm at the end of my show, so I've got to go, just remember what is, and pay attention to, it's kind of tricky because you got to pay attention to your fears, which is, oh my God, I'm afraid we're going to break up. But then you've got to remember, wait a minute, let me stay with what I know to be true. That will help a lot, and communicating, which you are doing. And just, if you're going to your body and you're going to food, you're going away from something else. But you can stick with it, and you can do this. I'm proud of you for.
Thank you.
I'm proud of you for being able. I'm proud of you for being able to recognize that something was going on with you instead of focusing on the bread and peanut butter.
Yeah. Okay. Right. I wrote that down too. Thank you so much. I said it's going to body and food, going away from something else.
Yes. If you're turning to your body and to food, thoughts of it or focusing on that, you're turning away from something else.
And I also wrote, remember what is, stay with what I know is true. Okay. Thank you so much, Dr.
Nina. You're welcome, all Nicole. Right. Let me know how it goes.
Okay. I will. Thanks so much. Bye.
Bye. And thank you, everyone. Thank you all for joining me today on the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio. I am so glad to spend this time with you. If you would like more food for thought, check out my website, Dr. Nina Inc., drninainc.com, and follow me on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Dr. Nina Inc. Be sure to sign up for my free giveaways. Right now, I'm giving away the first two chapters of my book. So you'll be the first to know about some exciting things I have coming up. Again, thanks for joining me. I'll see you next week.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.